Good morning. We are going to call the April 7th, 2021 meeting of the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors to order this morning. We will start with a Pledge of Allegiance, and I'll see if Mr. Jones, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance this morning? If all could stand and face the flag.
Please follow me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Secretary, could you please call the roll? I know we have a director on the phone, and I believe we have a director who is absent today, and I'd also like to make sure that legal counsel is on the phone.
Yes. Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
Legal counsel, are you on the line?
Yes.
And Director Pauly is present. With that, I know we have a number of guests here for an item on the action calendar in which I plan to move up right after executive reports. So I know with the speaker cards we will hold for that item. April, do we have any just general guests or anyone wishing to do general public comment of an item not on our agenda today?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right. Thank you so much. With that, we will go to number two and on the agenda today, which are our executive reports. Mr. Jones, good morning.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. Good morning. My written report's included in your board package. Just have a couple of quick updates I'd like to give. First, after over a decade hiatus, we're now hearing from Congress that they are going to be proceeding with appropriations earmarks, which are now being called federal community project funding requests. We have confirmed that in our service area, Congressman Calvert, Ruiz, and Takana will be accepting requests for the project funding. And accordingly, we've identified three projects in each of those members' respective districts, including the Quail Valley Septic to Sewer Conversion Project in Congressman Calvert's district, the Mead Valley Booster Pump Station, which is serving a disadvantaged community in Congressman Takano's district, and the San Jacinto Raw Water Conveyance in Congressman Ruiz's district. And we'll be submitting those. So we have put the documentation together for those submittals. We also have a letter, Director Pauly, or President Pauly, that we'll ask you to sign. And we'll be getting those in by April 16th. We do have D.C. meetings next week, virtual meetings for April 13th and 14th. So this is very timely. We'll be able to go over those with the members. And then this morning I heard as I was driving in from our lobbyists that Congressman Issa has now announced he will be also accepting earmark requests. So we are going to be looking for a project down in that area, potential project. We're not sure. But we do have to put the documentation together. He has a very short time frame for doing that, so we'll see if we can find something to fit there.
Just as I communicated with him the other day and suggested that if he was going to do earmarks, that Eastern be certainly – I'm sorry, not earmarks. What are they? Community
– They are community project funding requests.
Project funding requests that we would certainly have some good projects in order to put in there. So
well, thank
his
you.
Office has decided to do those.
The other item I have is also a federal-related item. Senator Feinstein's introduced a draft bill, the STREAM Act, the Support to Rehydrate the Environment, Agriculture, and Municipalities Act. It's been distributed in draft basis to a group of stakeholders of which we're part of. Provides funding for storage, importantly, recycling, habitat restoration, desalination, drinking water in disadvantaged communities, stormwater capture and low-interest water infrastructure loans. One of the key things that's in there is the board is aware we've been working extensively over the last year to address the reauthorization of the WIN, W-I-I-N, Title 16 program for water recycling, which would expire in December of 2021. There is language in the draft of the STREAM Act that addresses Title 16 reauthorization in general, and also alternative language that Senator Feinstein's staff has included that's based on language developed by Eastern and the Water Use Association to essentially amend the WIN Act and essentially consolidate it with the what we call legacy Title 16 program. There's been an issue associated with Congress appropriating money, and because their legacy or the older projects are not active, that money has been left on the table, and then the WIN requests have been underfunded. So our language would address that basic structural problem and is included for stakeholder review in Senator Feinstein's draft that she's circulating. Stakeholders have until April 8th to comment on that draft, and we'll be keeping the board informed as that legislation moves forward. And that concludes my comments today. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Good morning, Laura Nemora. Do you have anything for us this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Nick?
Again, nothing this morning.
Mr. Mawad?
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just a couple of quick items. Yesterday, the Moreno Valley City Council approved the sale of a property in Victoriano Park to EMWD. As you recall, this is an agreement we had reached with the city staff to be able to construct a well as part of our North Paris groundwater program. So we're very pleased that the city has approved that transfer, and we will be moving quickly to go ahead and advance that well. Secondly, I just wanted to make the board aware, we recently advertised for public review the draft environmental impact report for our purified water replenishment program, and the public review comment closed last Friday, April 2nd. We received two comment letters, one from the State Water Resource Control Board, the other from the Rincon Band of Luciano Indians. The contents of the comment letter appear to be minor in nature. We plan to respond to those letters and then bring forward the EIR to this board for certification consideration in early June. That's it.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Wall, anything this morning?
Nothing this morning.
Very good. Thank you all. With that, we will move on to our consent calendar. Are there any board members wishing to pull an item for consent or have additional questions? Director Becker, are you good on the consent calendar?
Yes.
And I will look for a motion and a second for the consent calendar.
I'll make a motion to approve consent calendar.
I'll second it.
Motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Slauson. Would you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the consent calendar is approved on a 4-0 vote with Director Corona absent. That will take us to this morning's action calendar. I know we have a number of guests on item C, so I'm going to have go ahead and we're going to take item C out of order, which is to adopt a proposed resolution adopting the Eastern Municipal Water District Reserve Policy. And Mr. Hayes, you're going to
be it's actually 4A that you would.
I'm sorry.
Looks like it was already moved up for you.
I apologize. It was moved up for me. Okay, my bad. 4A, which is to adopt a proposed resolution amending the EMWD Administrative Code, Title 3, Article 8, Comprehensive Debt Policy. Mr. Hayes, you are going to give us a presentation on that, and then we will take public speakers after your presentation.
Morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Appreciate the opportunity to come before you today with this item. Just waiting for the presentation. This item pertains to revised comprehensive debt policy. This morning I'll provide a brief background on the policy, the events leading up to the creation of the policy, review a request for information staff received from the board, and then make a recommendation. Prior to 2017, the district relied on several standalone policies related to debt. Each of them addressed different topics. In late 2016, Senate Bill 1029 was signed by then-Governor Jerry Brown and went into effect January 1, 2017. The bill required California municipalities to issue debt, or I'm sorry, who issue debt to adopt a comprehensive policy outlining various topics, including the purpose and use of debt proceeds, types of debt that may be issued, as well as policy goals. The district has a very active debt program, and that's for both general district debt and land secured debt. It's among one of the leading issuers of CFDs in the state, and approximately a third of the CFDs formed in the county of Riverside are Eastern-led CFDs. The district benefits from maintaining a strong debt policy. It serves as a guiding document for internal and external staff, demonstrates the district's commitment to responsible financial planning, and also communicates the various metrics the district uses and has established in order to achieve and maintain a strong credit rating. The Government Finance Officers Association, which is a nationwide professional association of more than 20,000 state and local government finance officers, explains adherence to a debt management policy signals to rating agencies and capital markets that a government is well managed to meet its debt obligations in a timely manner. A strong credit rating enables a district to achieve favorable financing terms, which ultimately lessens the burden and costs eventually passed down to its customers. Comprehensive debt policy was adopted by the board January 18, 2017, and was incorporated into the district's administrative code. The policy complies with the requirements of SB 1029 and applies to all the district's obligations, including its general district revenue bonds, bonds issued by the Eastern Municipal Water District Financing Authority, debt issued by the JPA that was established with Rancho, the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority, as well as the CFD bonds and assessment district bonds. The policy consolidated various standalone policies into one comprehensive policy. The policy was reviewed by district staff, as well as its financing team, including the district's bond counsel, special tax consultant, and municipal advisor. Brad Neal from Stradling, our bond counsel, is here with us today, as well as Heidi Sheppy from Webb Municipal Finance. We also have our municipal advisor, Anna Sarabian, on the phone with us, and district staff, as well as other supporting team members for bond counsel and special tax consultant. After reviewing the policy, we've made several recommendations. I'll just highlight them here today. Happy to answer any questions. We went over these a few weeks ago on March 17th, but happy to answer any specific questions related to these. Essentially, staff's recommending we revise the minimum lot requirement to 100 lots and then require an additional non-pledged special reserve for lots or for projects between 100 and 150 lots. In addition, the district doesn't allow tax rates to escalate, never has, but it's not in the policy. And so we'd like to include a provision in the policy explaining that we won't allow tax rates to escalate. We've also added some language to strengthen letter of credit requirements. We want to remove developers' ability to use cash. Cash could be subject to bankruptcy provisions in the event a bankruptcy were to happen on the developer side. Removing this strengthens the policy and the district's procedures requiring a letter of credit be posted by a bank. We've also strengthened the requirements for the letter of credit and establish a minimum credit rating. You know, we want to use banks that are well established, have substantial assets, and don't provide any additional risk to the district or letter of credit. We also are including a JCFA policy for CFDs where the district is not the lead agency. We're just going to make it similar to the policy principles wherein Eastern is the lead agency on the JCFAs. Then there's also just miscellaneous terminology and procedural updates. Back in January, a request was made by Director Armstrong for an item to be brought back to the board regarding the debt policy, specifically the land secured financing component of the policy. On March 17th, staff provided a presentation with a summary background of the policy and identified the land secured policy principles. And then, as I mentioned, reviewed the revisions that we were recommending. The board discussed the item, and Director Armstrong made an additional request that when the debt policy is brought back to the board, it's considered that the fee component not be included as an eligible expense. Tax-exempt bonds are issued to finance public improvements, including water, sewer improvements, parks, schools, public buildings. They're payable from special taxes paid for by property owners through their property tax bill. New infrastructure is paid for by new property owners and not passed on to existing Eastern customers. The district has no financial liability for the repayment of the bonds, and we essentially collect, levy, and apply the special taxes. The team took a diverse sample of 10 CFDs, which included a wide range of year established, number of parcels, location, project size, and facilities funded. The amount of fees and improvements of that sample amounted to $65 million. Approximately 53% of the expenses identified were Eastern fees, 21% were Eastern improvements, and then the last component, 26%, were fees or improvements for other agencies. Because the fees are such a large component of the program, staff's recommending not to exclude fees as an eligible expense in our policy. Recommendation for today is to adopt a proposed resolution amending the Eastern Administrative Code as it relates to revising the comprehensive debt policy. And we will review this every 2 years and bring back the policy revisions as required, or even before then if substantial changes are made. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. We have a number of financing team here today, and then, as I understand, members from the public would like to speak as well.
Do we have any board questions for Mr. Hayes?
I don't. I think we've discussed this in committee pretty thoroughly. So,
I have some questions, I'd rather wait till after the public comments.
We can take public comment, and then we can bring you back up.
Sure.
And do any questions. So, with that, we do have a number of people requesting to speak on this item. And I'll remind everybody, if you'd please come to the microphone, and we will have a three-minute limit on public comment on this item. We'll bring up Mr. Nelson Chung first, if you'd like to speak, sir. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. President and the board members. I'm Nelson Chung, president of Pacific Communities, and we have been working with the partnership with the Water District for over 20 years. I just want to take—I know the three-minute limit, but I want to chip in my experience, perspective as a builder. And actually, be honest, with or without CFD, at the end of the day, buyer pays. They pay one way or the other. The question is, which way is better for them? As you may or may not know, 80 to 90%, or sometime over that, are buyers using FHA or VA loans. They use either 3.5% down payment or zero down payment. And when the sales amount go beyond FHA limit, that's when the dilemma comes in. And the one way to look at a CFD is to treat that almost like a no-down second, but which is not allowed under current situation. So basically, right currently, I believe the FHA limit is $474,000. But once, say, we have a $500,000 house, once you pass the $474,000, you got a dilemma. You either chip in 10 or 20% down. So instead of $15,000 down, you jump to $50,000. So basically, you just knock a hell lot of people out of the possibility for owning their dream home. And that is that's one way to look at that, and let alone the other financial issues. So in a nutshell, without a CFD, I would say most of the project will not be feasible in today's market. But that's my 5 cents, and thank you for allowing me to make this presentation, and appreciate the support for CFD. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your comments. Next, we will have Mr. Jim Zimmerman, please.
Good morning, Mr. President and members of the board. Thank you for allowing me to speak for a minute. I'm Jim Zimmerman. I'm from Zimmerman Group. I'm a consultant to developers and home builders for the better part of 2 decades related to CFDs. And I just want to take the opportunity to quickly thank the board and the district for the partnership that they've had over the years with my clients, the development community, and also quickly thank the district staff and consulting team who have been tremendous in helping this process. CFDs are a very important component to the development process, as you'll hear from these developers. And the district's policies have been a great benefit to the community and to the stakeholders. For the district, it allows and facilitates development, much-needed infrastructure. And for the project, it provides low-cost, tax-exempt financing. And as Nelson just indicated, it really helps the homeowners get into the homes that they need to get into with not necessarily a reduced housing cost, but as he pointed out, affordability getting into the home is really important to the marketplace for various reasons, down payments, loan amounts, things like that. I wanted to point out that over the last few weeks, the Water District, the EMWD's name has come up as an agency to be commended for their CFD program, as I've spoken with other agencies, particularly other water districts. And as you know, Eastern has either the most or one of the most active CFD programs in the state. And the policies have allowed for that. And Eastern, as a lead agency, has been a huge benefit to the growth of the community and the development of this infrastructure and projects. And I would encourage the board to adopt these policies so that Eastern can continue to be the lead agency in financing these fees and this infrastructure. I want to thank you very much for your time. Appreciate all the work you've done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your comments. Next, we have Mr. Ron Sullivan.
Morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Thank you for being here, letting us be here today. EMWD for the last, 20 years, 25 years, if you look at the debt policy that has existed and you look at what happened in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, you didn't see any foreclosures on CFD projects. And that's attributable to the debt policy that existed, that currently exists for CFDs here in the district. I believe that CFDs actually benefit not only the builder, but it also benefits the property owner. It also protects or gives some encouragement to the landowner who may have held this land for 15, 20, or 30 years, may be on the cusp of trying to do something, on the edge of something, and a CFD allows someone to be able to sell the property for some affordable rates that lets the builder get to his IRR to make sure that he has a profitable project. If you look at some of the values of a CFD, you can look at over the past 10, 15, 20 years, where maybe the average home rate for a mortgage is somewhere between 5 and 6%. And if you look at the average rate of a CFD in the water district today is about 3 or 3.3%. That's the best that I could remember. And so it gives a lot of benefit to a property owner, not also to say that one of the other benefits is that it's a lower cost for him. Someone that wants to buy a new home on a CFD, they have the opportunity not to go into the CFD. They can pay the higher rate. And so you don't find very many people going for that option. And so it just has a lot of benefits. The other benefit for a homeowner is that it's tax deductible. A lot of people don't realize that. They get to deduct that because it's on their property tax bill. So it's another added value for that. It's just a separate debt policy within for just the land that the district has, and they have other policies for the other bonds that they do issue for infrastructure. One of the things that I would like to suggest is I know in the policy you're going from 150 down to 100. You know, and certainly in my case, I would say that 75 to 100 might be reasonable. You look at the market today, and all the builders are very conservative today. And so you have a tract of 252, and you may have a tract that is a dash one, a dash two, and a final. And so each one of those are going to be under 100. And so I actually have three tracts that actually fall into that category. I would also like to, you know, suggest that we leave the fees in the current thing because that actually does help promote future development for EMWD. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you for your...
What was your name again, sir?
So I have William, I believe, Sarcastic from Lennar Homes. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. My name is William Sacristi, Director for Planning for Lennar Homes Inland Empire. I just wanted to echo what's been said. Obviously, CFDs are a very intricate part of how we underwrite projects for new development. We pay the price we pay based on the ability to conduct CFDs. Lennar specifically, we have 8 projects under development in the district, 3 more in due diligence, and 5 that are completed and under home building operations. And I can honestly say many of those would not be possible if it wasn't because we have the opportunity to have a CFD. Happy to answer any questions from the home building community. Thank you for your help in making all these projects possible today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your comments. Our final speaker on this item, request to speak, is Mr. Lou Monville.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board, distinguished staff. Lou Monville, Executive Officer, Riverside County Building Industry Association. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all today. The BIA in this county has enjoyed a long and positive relationship with Eastern Municipal Water District. We continue to appreciate that partnership. I also would be remiss if I didn't recognize the collaboration we've had from Mr. Jones over his tenure. It is going to be a loss to our region, but I certainly wish him well in his retirement, and it is well-deserved. Thank you for the opportunity to chat with you all today regarding your debt policy. As has been noted before, you all are a leader in this space, one of the most fiscally responsible and conservative districts in the region, but also one of the ones most forward-leaning as it relates to bringing safe and reliable drinking water and the facilities needed to deliver that to residents throughout the Riverside County, and I know our builders have been pleased to be a part of your growth and expansion in that regard. I don't have to tell you, we read it all every day. We remain in a housing crisis in this state. Affordability is at an all-time challenge. As Mr. Chung noted, CFDs play a critical role in helping folks achieve the American dream of home ownership. I think the policy that you have set forward continues your conservative and fiscally responsible approach, but also allows the critical flexibility that we need in this California housing crisis to deliver not only infrastructure that we all need for safe and reliable drinking water and sewer, but to bring homes and parks and schools to our community. So I would ask for your continued support of your policy as it stands, including the ability to include fees. Our industry stands willing and able to continue to partner with you as you continue to work to provide for your residents and our future home buyers, and appreciate the partnership and would urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your comments. That wraps up the people wanting to speak on this issue. Mr. Hayes, if you could come back up. I know the board probably has some questions on this item. Let me start with, I'll ask Director Record, who is on the phone, if he has any questions or comments on this item first. Director Record?
Nothing, President Pauly. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Armstrong, I know you had some questions or comments.
Yes, thank you. So first I wanted to compliment the staff on the comprehensive debt policy. The whole thing that you put together is quite a document. And one of the items in there, just wanted to know if you anticipate utilizing. I saw that WIFIA was in there, and do you actually anticipate participating in WIFIA program in the future, or is it just an alternative to evaluate, you know, each time? Or
yeah, that was one of the new additions to the policy. Previously, it was not included. WIFIA has been a topic of conversation, multiple topics of conversation over the last few years. And talking to our general district municipal advisor, he suggested we add that component should the district board decide to pursue that. We didn't want to be limited by policy limitation. Still up to staff to review, you know, the tools available, and then ultimately the board's approval. But we wanted to add the component in case opportunity comes up.
There are no current plans to do that. When we've looked at it in the past, the interest rates are not that advantageous compared to what we can issue debt for,
right.
And the administration is somewhat of a nightmare. Yeah. But we do want to have it in case they streamline the administration and the interest rates change. We would want to have it in the policy to have that option. But again, as Thomas pointed out, that would all come back to the board if we right. were to enter into a transaction.
No, I actually think it's a great addition. I think it's one that you should always keep your eye on. And I know the interest rates may not always be, you know, as attractive, but there's other components of the term to it, the length of the term, et cetera, that have some advantages too. So it's nice to have it in the mix to evaluate. So I just thought that was a good addition. Well, to follow up on a couple questions related to land secured financing, there was a comment that we went through the housing crisis and never once was there a foreclosure on any properties because of our policy that we had in place. And that was actually one of the questions I had. Have there ever been any judicial foreclosures for non-payment of the assessments?
Not that I'm aware of. Our bond counsel, Brad Neal, he's here. He has essentially been a part of the district's land secured program since it started. So I'd like to defer the question to him for comment.
Is he on the line?
He's right here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Even
apologize,
better.
Sir.
Better than on the line.
Better than on the line. Okay.
Good morning, board. I've been bond counsel to Eastern Municipal Water District and have worked on all the land secured transactions since about 2002. And during the period that was described, 2008 to 2011, there were a handful of properties that letters were sent out, and the process was begun, but none that I'm aware of that actually went to foreclosure.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I guess another question relates to the fees. And so, and I'm not sure that you're the one that would answer this question, but what is the basis for calculating our capacity fees? What methodology do we use for the calculation? There's a couple different methodologies for determining what your capacity fees should be. And I'm just wondering if anybody knows the methodology that Eastern's is based off of.
Yeah, I don't specifically know that, you know, off the top of my head. like to open it up for either a comment from Brad or Heidi, our special tax consultant.
Well, is the question regarding the components of our fees, our connection fees?
Yeah, I'm not clear what the question is.
Director Armstrong, let me just chime in. I think I understand your question is in developing our FPC or financial participation charges, it's actually a hybrid. So there's a buy-in charge and then the impact on
Thank
the capacity.
You. That's so, what I was wondering.
Yeah, okay. And just a quick comment is we're going through that process right now of re-looking at the FPC charges, which were done in 2011, and that will be coming to the board over the summer.
Well, I asked that you include the option to not include the capacity fees, and I appreciate you putting that in the PowerPoint. And I still feel that way. I feel I fully appreciate that the in-tract facilities have a direct benefit to that tract and those homeowners, and I think there's a clear nexus that justifies including those in a CFD. The capacity fees, which are either a buy-in or system improvements in the future, I don't think that the relationship is necessarily so direct. And I feel like it's great to have developers here and support it, and I know it's a great tool for them, but I would like to see maybe an unbiased, independent, objective, empirical study that demonstrates, you know, the value of this and the impact or non-impact, and we don't really have that. I think it's an additional burden that gets put onto our customers who we serve in the future for the next 30 years. I think it's done at their expense. I'm not sure that they're all sophisticated enough to understand what is taking place, and I don't support the capacity fees as being part of it. I appreciate the administration, the effort. I agree that Eastern is perceived as a leader in this area, and I think how you administer them, what you go through, is to be commended. I don't have any issue with how well Eastern administers this program. It's just a policy opinion, in my opinion, that those should not be part of the financing. So I would make a motion that we approve the comprehensive debt policy with a revision to it that we do not include capacity fees in the CFPs or the JCFAs going forward.
Any further questions?
No further
questions. Okay, so we have a motion. I do have some questions, though, which I'd like to get to before we address the motion. Thomas, have we had opportunities in the past when interest rates have been lowered to refinance some of this bondedness?
Yes, most recently in January. Okay.
That has helped lower the tax payments to these particular homeowners in the CFD, correct?
Correct. Nearly all of them will receive a reduction in their property tax bill. Notices will be going out at the time we establish the levy. The savings is anywhere between $38 per parcel to upwards of $400.
And because we took the lead on that, I don't want to speak for individual homeowners, but most likely they probably wouldn't have refinanced if that was on their initial cost of the home, correct?
Correct. The way we were able to receive such a great savings is establishing the pool, refunding the pool, all of the strong credit characteristics of that pool. It's very unlikely that any individual CFD, or for that matter, any individual homeowner, could have received that same type of savings.
Thank you. And then my second question is, this is kind of anecdotal, but it'll get to the point. When I was walking in today, a customer pulled up in the parking lot and asked the general manager and I where she could go pay her bill. And I thought, okay, well, that's great. We directed her because we always like people to pay their bills here. But would that customer ever be affected when we do a CFD? This seemed like a nice customer. She's trying to just pay probably her water and sewer bill. But our general customers don't contribute to the work we do on CFDs, correct? Your time on these, our bond consultants' time, correct? This is completely outside of the water and wastewater service billing.
Correct. The charges and fees that our normal existing customers pay don't contribute to the work that staff does on the program. The fees we pay to bond counsel, our tax consultants, we incorporate that into the administrative component of the levy each year for the CFDs.
Okay, so our general water, wastewater, recycled customers do not have any financial participation when we do these programs?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. Those are the two questions I had.
Can I follow up on your
Absolutely.
Question?
Yes, yes.
So the refunding that we did recently for the pooled CFDs, what was the average rate before and the average rate after? What was the difference? Do you recall?
I don't have that with me here right now. We looked at each individual CFD, and if they weren't going to realize savings, we wouldn't have included them in the pooled refunding. I'd be happy to send you that information externally, or we have two bond sales coming up in 2 weeks. I'd be happy to bring that information at that time, whatever's convenient for you. Or I could look it up and bring it up after the rest of the action items.
No, I just was trying to compare that in comparison to what you asked. Like if somebody was going to refinance their mortgage today and they save 1.5%, they would save 1.5% if they were in the CFDs. What was the magnitude of savings for those? Was it 1.5%? Was it 0.5%? Just sort of to add some context to your question.
Sure. Yeah. Each individual homeowner obviously still has the opportunity to refund their mortgage, lessen the term,
right.
A plethora of options available to them. In grander terms, the pooled refunding helped all of the property owners, I understand your point.
Well, while it may not have been an apples-to-apples comparison, my point was by doing the CFD for infrastructure in the ground rather than probably putting that onto the cost of a home, which a developer would do, we're able to occasionally lower that infrastructure in the ground through the CFD program when interest rates are favorable in our direction. And we take the opportunity to do that.
Correct. And also, argument could be made that the financing a developer can get won't be the tax-exempt bonds that we issue.
All right. So if go ahead.
I just wanted to ask a homeowner, can they prepay that debt?
They can, and we occasionally get those requests. Property owner requests to prepay those, pay them off, make additional payments. We'll look at it, calculate it, provide the amount to them, call additional bonds, pay that down. Yeah, they certainly have the option to do that.
Okay, I like that tool. I'm looking at some of the fees within Riverside County. We have the TUMP fees, the DIF fees, the flood control, the KRAT, the school fees and the multi-species habitat conservation fees and Eastern fees. I calculate just off the top of my head over $50,000 a house. It probably depends on which city you're in and how big a house you're building. But if you just take the school and Eastern fees, that's probably close to half of it, getting nearer. So it's not as though all the fees are being financed. They're only financing these fees with the CFD on usually school and Eastern, sometimes a DIF fee, right? But never above that 2% cap.
Correct. And when we evaluate the CFD at the time of formation and then at the time we issue bonds, we look at the capacity available and ensuring that property tax, rate won't go up past 2%, making it still affordable per parcel. And essentially what happens is most of the time, all of the fees aren't included. The developer is still, on the hook for a big component of them. We don't issue the bonds to you know, pay for all of that. We do up to and what we've identified as being an acceptable capacity based on the policy principles that we have. When we compared our policy to other agencies' policies, a lot of the agencies have escalating tax rates. A couple cities, many school districts have that, and which is one of the reasons why we wanted to include us not allowing that. Makes it more affordable for homeowners. Also, by Eastern leading the CFDs, we're able to benefit, and homeowners are able to benefit from that. If we didn't form the CFD, it's, you know, possible a city takes it on, a school district takes it on, and then the homeowner eventually have to, you know, the CFD is in, you know, less of condition than what Eastern requires.
Okay, and I think what Mr. Chung said regarding the FHA and VA financing, what the limit is, I don't know, that may not affect some other areas of the district, but in Moreno Valley, that's probably a form of financing that's more commonly used. And I could see this being the elimination of the CFD could be a breaking point for a lot of homeowners people who want to be homeowners. So I'm really comfortable with the program, and I support it, and I support the proposed revisions to the.
I have a follow-up question. The number of lots going from 150 down to 100 or potentially 75. What about a property owner that wants to come in and develop his lot and build a home? Does Eastern have any program for that person to finance fees?
As far as the land secured side, the debt, you know, I manage that component. As far as options available to individual property owners, I'm not familiar with any. We'd have to, you know, check with our development services team. I know they regularly work with property owners identifying, you know, various items related to the financing, but, you know, I'm not sure.
If I can add, Dr. Armstrong, the two areas that I can recall where we have financing mechanisms for fees, if you recall, in wine country, where we have a special benefit assessment, we do have a financing program, as well as Old Town Temecula. There's also a special benefit assessment where we also provide a financing mechanism for those individual developers.
Just one final comment. I, if I'm not mistaken, I think that FHA and whoever, didn't they increase their borrowing ceilings just recently? It's not 400 and something, now it's 525 or... Yeah, well I don't know. You made that comment that it was like 400-something thousand, but I think that they do increase those limits as well. That provides more ceiling for financing. Anyways, those are. I'm done with my comments.
All right. Any more questions for staff on this? Thank you, Thomas.
President Pauley, I have a question.
Director Record, yes, sir.
I'm just trying to understand Director Armstrong's feeling that capacity fees should not be included in CFDs. I mean, I think it's an important part of the fairness of buying into the system, and I'm just not sure why that shouldn't be included in financing.
I absolutely believe that their capacity fees should be paid. It's, to me, I think it should be paid by the person developing the property. That's who is developing the property, and it should be paid by them. I don't think it should be passed on to the future homeowners and our future customers who are going to be paying it for the next 30 years as an assessment that is through a CFD that we administer. I don't think it's fair. So,
I would just...
Okay. Well, I understand that then. I think that it's part of doing... business with Eastern, and I think it's completely justified that it be included in a CFD. So, and I respect your position, but you know, I'll support the. I won't support the substitute motion. I'll support the staff recommendation. Thank you.
And if I could just add a comment, then based on what they were discussing, if I was a new homeowner, I don't see any real difference if the house is $500,000 or $530,000, $500,000 with the financing for the CFD for $30,000, or if I have to come up with an additional $30,000 for a down payment or within my loan. I have to qualify for the higher amount, which might be a higher interest rate, depending. And I don't see a huge difference either way, except more, you know, probably beneficial for me qualifying to buy the home at the lesser amount. So I support staff's recommendation as well.
All right. There are no more questions. Thomas, thank you very much.
Thank you,
I would like to thank Director Armstrong for bringing this before the board. I think there's a very healthy discussion. I understand we have a motion before the board right now. Director Armstrong, would you mind restating this, since I'm getting older and my short-term memory is not as good as it used to be?
My motion was to approve the comprehensive debt policy with one revision, which is to exclude the capacity fees from being a component of financing and CFDs.
Is there a second for that motion? I do not hear a second. Director Armstrong, I'm sorry, Director Recker, there's no second for the motion, correct?
Yeah, I'll move staff's recommendation.
Okay, so Director Armstrong's motion without a second dies. We have a motion from Director Recker to move staff recommendation. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Director Slauson. May I get a roll call, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
No.
Director Recker?
Aye.
The motion passes 3 votes aye, 1 vote no, and Director Corona absent. Thank you for that, staff. We will now move on to item B, which is to approve and authorize a 3-year contract with Lance Soul Lunghard LLP for professional auditing services with two optional renewal years. Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning. Justice.
I think he got it.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I'm pleased to be here this morning to present the recommendation to approve and authorize a 3-year contract for professional auditing services. As a background, the last RFP for the auditing services was completed in December 2014. Davis Farr, our current auditors, was awarded the 5-year contract with the option to extend for 2 additional years in May 2015 when the board approved the recommendation from staff. The 5-year contract of Davis Farr expired in fiscal year 2019, and subsequently the board approved the extension for an additional 2 years. One was completed during the most recent audit, which was the fiscal year ended June 30, 2020. It is the Government Finance Officer Association's recommended best practice to undertake a competitive proposal at the end of the term of each audit contract. In line with that, staff issued a request for a proposal in January 8, 2021, this year, and we sent out 10 RFPs to 10... we sent out RFPs to 10 CPA firms for professional auditing services. Out of those 10 CPA firms, we received 7 proposals. So staff, senior finance staff consisting of the GM, Laura, CFO, John, senior finance manager, and myself reviewed and scored those 7 proposals. As part of the review process, there were 7 criteria in the RFP, and the key selection criteria were the qualification and experience of firm and their personnel, their approach and understanding of the RFP requirements, their availability to complete the audit for the audit time frame set by the district, and the pricing. So staff reviewed the 7 proposals and invited the top three firms selected for interview, which were Clifton Larson Allen, Lance Soule Langhard, and Rogers Anderson and Melody. Part of the scope of work for the RFP includes the financial statements audit of the district, the single audit, the agreed upon auditing procedures on the appropriations limit calculation, the assessment district's audit, and the preparation of their basic financial statements. And also we added the option to prepare the annual comprehensive financial report, which is a new option for this proposal or RFP. So as you can see from the metrics below, based on the proposal ranking and results of the interview, Lance Soule Langhard ranked the highest among the three, and key rating elements for their selection were their extensive experience in auditing services provided to government agencies and water districts. They also have significant experience in performing single audits for local governments. They will also be providing training and support for district staff for new government standards and any questions that may arise regarding accounting and audit issues throughout the audit year. And also they came up with the lowest pricing among the three. So as mentioned earlier, one of the selection criteria is to be able to meet the audit timeline of the district. This year, that audit timeline starts in May with a preliminary audit and concludes in December with the audit presentation to the board and the admin committee in December. So with that, staff would like to recommend to approve and authorize a 3-year contract with Lance Soule Langhard, LLP, to perform professional auditing services for fiscal years ending June 30, 2021 through June 30, 2023 for the full term amount not to exceed $189,400. The district has the option to extend the term of this contract for 2 additional years for the fiscal years ending 2024 and 2025. Funding for this item is in the biannual budget of the district for fiscal years 20 and 21. And with that, I'm open for any questions.
I understand we have a representative from the firm here?
Yes. I would like to introduce Mr. Richard Kikuchi. He's one of the partners at Lance Soule Langhard, and I'd like to invite him to...
Yeah, let's invite him up. I'd love to... I know you introduced yourself to the admin committee, but for the rest of the board, I'd wonder if you could give a little background on your firm and...
Absolutely. Good morning, members of the board. My name is Rich Kikuchi, and I'm here representing LSL. Lance Soule Langhard is too many syllables. So we go by LSL, and I'm thrilled for the opportunity to be working with EMWD. Just as a brief description and background of the firm, we've been around since 1929. We've been doing governmental audits and audits of water districts basically through inception. We have 4 offices. Our main office is in Brea, also an office in Santa Ana, Sacramento, and Houston, Texas. When we had the opportunity to bid on this engagement, I put together, I think, a really good team. I would be the engagement partner, basically overseeing the entire audit. I've also put together 2 other partners and a staff that is very experienced, so that would lend itself to being a very efficient audit and make for a smooth transition. So again, I'm thrilled to be here this morning representing LSL, and I'm here to answer any questions if you might have any.
Could you just give us a few names that you've done in the water and wastewater space that you've done audits for other agencies?
Sure. Yeah, so I've been involved and been the engagement partner of San Diego County Water Authority, Coachella Valley Water Authority, currently do a small one, Three Valleys Water District. Those are some of the ones that come to mind.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good morning. Thank you for coming. I always appreciate when people want to do business for us that they actually come to the board meeting. Is there any questions for either staff?
I do have a quick question for staff.
Sure. Okay.
Just so, which option are we doing? Are we doing the option where they will be completing the comprehensive annual financial report, or is that to be determined still?
That's still to be determined. This is the first year that we've put that option. Staff always used to prepare the annual comprehensive financial report. We put that option in there because we are in the midst of, actually, we're starting the ERP project, and staff will be heavily involved with the ERP project.
Director Record, any questions on this item?
No, thank you.
With that, if there are no further questions, I will look for a motion and a second on the item.
I'll move the item.
I'll second.
A move by Director Slauson, second by Director Armstrong. Would you please call the roll?
Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The item passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. Thank you to staff. Thank you, sir, for coming. Thank Look forward to working with you.
Thanks for coming.
That will move on to item C, which is to adopt a proposed resolution adopting the Eastern Municipal Water District Reserve Policy. Good morning, Mr. Adams.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. So excited to be here today to present the updated reserve policy for board consideration. Just quickly, this policy, the draft policy, was presented to the admin committee on March 18th, provided or received some good feedback from the committee, and so those comments have been incorporated both in the policy and the presentation. So just quickly, a little bit of background. So just as a best practice, and I wanted to jump that out first. So this is what GFOA, Government Finance Officers Association, recommends. Recommends government agencies have reserve policies that are appropriate for the entity with the goal of maintaining adequate level of reserves and mitigating against future risks, and also for us to help with our stable rates. So the benefits for the district to have a policy, and I highlighted a few, but showing the board's commitment to the long-term health of the district protects us against financial impacts of unanticipated events, provides certainty, stability, and certainty for in our level of service, and then ultimately supports our credit rating. Certainly earlier about the debt policy, very important from a credit rating aspect, but also having significant or adequate policies related to reserves and other financial policies are very important. And as I noted, really an industry best practice for agencies like EMWD. So I want to talk about the update to the reserve policy. And the updates really started last year. And because we were doing really a comprehensive update starting from ground zero, it did take us a lot of time to sort of research and go through that process. I want to thank two staff members. It was really a team effort. Tracy Lee, who was really the lead on the policy, and then Wilma Garris, who also supported her, specifically related to reviewing the business practices. Just quickly, the original policy was adopted in August of 1999, so over 22 years ago. The policy was amended a few times, was amended in December of 2001, and then again in January of 2003. The 2003 policy was really our foundation, and we used that to go forward. Certainly, we talked earlier about the debt policy. This was the rebuild from the ground up. So using the policy as our foundation, we did a few things. First, developed policy principles, which I will cover in a few minutes. We also reviewed our current business practices. As you can imagine, in 20 years, business practices have changed. In addition, you know, reporting and accounting standards have changed. And so really looking at what is consistent with business, you know, with industry standards, especially as GASB has changed over the 20 years. So took that into account as well. Also, we looked at AQUA and GFOA policy guidelines in developing the reserve policy. And one of the real keys that was very, very helpful, we looked at 9 other agencies, water districts in particular, several in our region, but throughout the state, and many of them have updated their reserve policy in the past 5 years. So had a good sample of policies to draw on, so that was very important. So I want to talk about just some of the key changes. In the report, we spend a little more time on the actual changes that were made between the 2003 and the 2021 change, or the 21 comprehensive policy. Really 7 sections of the policy provide a policy overview, policy principles as well. We also added funding targets, a reserve summary. Some of the changes that I just want to highlight is really in the reserve detail. There are reserves that were very specific for bond issues. So we had 3 or 4 reserves just for each bond issue. That has sort of been eliminated and has been identified as one reserve. The other thing I want to highlight was the R&R and system betterment. In the 2003 policy, it was really combined as one reserve for capital. We have separated that in this policy. And then I mentioned we eliminated a few. I'll give you a good example is the dental reserve. At one point, we used to self-fund dental. We do not do that anymore, so that was a reserve as a sample that was eliminated. The other comment is we added procedures for reporting and compliance. One of the things that's actually in the policy is to review and to bring it to the board every 2 years. Certainly don't want to wait 20 years to bring the policy back to the board. All right, so going on to the policy principles, and I'll read these, but maintain strong financial health of the district, provide operating liquidity for rate stability to customers and to help ensure future rate increases are reasonable, ensure funding is available for current and future replacement of assets, provide financial flexibility for unanticipated costs and emergency expenses, assure the district maintains the highest possible credit ratings, and then finally, really establish reserves that are legally required either through bond issues or related to bond issues and other agreements that we may have. So in this policy, reserves are really in 2 buckets, and I'll talk just briefly. Restricted are really reserves that are defined for narrow purposes and either restricted by the law, bond, covenants, or other contractual obligations. Then there's unrestricted board designated, and this is where the board has full discretion. We have 9 that we're recommending today. But these reserves are for specific purposes that the board or staff recommends to the board, and the staff or the board can make changes should the district's needs change. As you know, unrestricted reserves are really an important measurement of the financial health of the district and one in which various stakeholders use to really rate the strength of the district. So this table, I'm showing you the categories, restricted and unrestricted, and really broken off into the 3 areas, operating, debt service, and capital. We only have 4 restricted reserve funds, GO bond reserves, which is both proceeds and property taxes to pay back those bond issues. We have a debt service reserve, which is really required either as part of a bond issue or part of a loan agreement with the state. And then capital. One is related to future development, and then bond improvements based on us issuing debt. Today we have 9 that we're recommending. Some of them are from the old policy. We have a couple that are new. Unrestricted board designated, and I won't go through those yet. My next few slides, I'll talk just briefly, give you a definition for each one, talk about the source and then the target. So the first one up is operating reserves. As I mentioned, 1 restricted general obligation bond reserve. The undesignated next one is operating reserve. This is what we call our working capital, our 90 days. This is really there for liquidity, one, the liquidity, but also unexpected items that have come up. GFOA recommends, I believe, a 20%, which is the 15% working capital, and then a 5% emergency. Our operating reserve is 25%. Next one is rate stabilization reserve. This one is was in the 2003 policy. The real difference between the prior policy and this policy is it really just dealt with the increases from NWD to mitigate against extraordinary rate increases. We added language in the policy to really talk about that stabilization for fluctuations based on changes in expenses. So there are a lot of things that have impacts on our revenues and expenses, and so that fund is really not just for MWD increases, but our overall changes in revenues and expenses. The other three are very similar to the prior policy: research and development, general liability and litigation, and workers' comp. No changes in those three areas. This is just a table to show you the breakout. General obligation bonds, sources, property taxes when paying back the bonds required by the bond documents. Currently, the reserve is about $4.8 million, and that's as of the end of December. For the other five operating reserves, I show you 90-day minimum, currently at $60 million, and that's coming from operating revenue. And then rate stabilization, all of these are coming from operating revenue. Rate stabilization currently is pegged at 1 month of operations, of operating expenses, currently at 17.5. And then R&D is at 3, general liability at 2, and then workers' comp depends on the average of the 3 years versus actual experience, and currently it's at 0 because our actual experience has been less. All right, next, moving on to debt service, really only two. One is restricted, one is unrestricted. We are required to have a debt service reserve either based on bond documents or state contracts on SRF loans. And the other one is our annual operating debt service, which is established to pay next year's debt service. And so this is the highlights, the sources for debt service reserve, general revenue, required by the agreement, and currently the amount is $10.4 million, and then operating revenue for the annual operating debt service reserve, and that's currently at 22 at the end of December. Just to give context, and I just added this, this slide as part of this presentation, just to give an idea of our debt profile. We have almost $1 billion in outstanding debt, and so when we talk about the importance of reserves and how that has an impact on our cost of capital, it has been very beneficial to have significant and adequate reserves in planning, and also from a rating aspect. And so that has helped keep our cost of capital down. So moving on to capital reserves, and this is really the last category and where we have a few of the major changes. So I highlighted the two restricted ones: future development required by statute. I think it's 6600 of the government code. And this is the development, developer fees, connection fees, capacity fees that are put in this fund and used to really support a large percentage of the capital program on an annual basis. The bond improvement fund, these are the proceeds from the bond issues. Currently, the balance is about $110 million, and we draw down on this every 3 to 6 months, depending on the activity at the CIP program. As I mentioned earlier, system betterment and R&R were really combined into one capital reserve in the prior policy. We separated these two out. System betterment, I have an example of what system betterment is and R&R, we're separating out those two reserves with different targets. And then finally, equipment replacement. This was renamed from the prior policy, but other than that, has not been changed. So this was one of the suggestions from the admin committee, is really explain the difference between future growth, system betterment, and R&R. And so starting with future growth, projects that add system capacity, storage treatment, and transmission. A good example in this five-year capital plan is the Sky Canyon Sewer Pipeline, which is right now currently budgeted at $14 million. But that's a good example of something that is adding capacity to the system. System betterment, projects that improve system maintenance, reliability, and operational efficiency. good example, which is 100%, is the brine pipeline maintenance access improvements, and this is where we're putting in manways in order to access the brine line to clean it. And so that project's about $3.1 million, and that's truly not adding capacity. We're not replacing or rehabbing a system. We're just making some improvements to improve operation and maintenance of those brine lines. And then rehab and replacement project replaces the capacity. So we're either rebuilding something, removing, and rebuilding something. So a good example is a corroded pipe on the Dunlap Drive recycled water pipeline replacement at $1.2 million is a good example of that at 100% R&R. So here are the categories. Future development, again, from connection fees, the requirement is restricted by the statute. Current balance at the end of December was about $30 million. Next one, bond improvement reserves, again, from proceeds from bond issues. Current balance is about $110 million. And then our three undesignated board, or unrestricted board designated reserves for capital. One is the system betterment. The target is 2% net capital assets. As you know, we have about $4 billion in capital assets. That $223 million is above the target, but that's because it includes committed projects within the current CIP budget. R&R is 1 year depreciation currently at about $95 million. As we talked at the last board meeting, the R&R model has an annual investment of about $89 million that should be spent over 100 years based on the replacement of our current system. And then finally, the equipment reserve, which again did not change from the prior policy, and currently we have $3 million in that reserve. So this is a summary of the reserves by category. They're restricted at $155.6 million. Board designated, over $425 million, and the total reserves as of December 31st, and this was in the second quarter report at $581 million. So just, sort of my final slide is just the importance of unrestricted board designated reserves, and to really give context, we have operations and at an annual budget about 240, and we have a 90-day reserve of $60 million. We look at capital, I mentioned almost $4 billion. We have two reserves set aside to help support that, the R&R replacement reserve and then the five-year, and then the system betterment reserve, which currently has $218 million. And then finally, just debt service, again, almost $1 billion in outstanding debt. And as far as that, operating reserve is only $22 million for next year's debt service, or for the remaining of this year's debt service. So with that, what's in front of you today is a proposed resolution rescinding those initial resolution and the two amendments, and then adopting the EMWD reserve policy. And with that, I'm here for any questions.
All right, very comprehensive. Thank you very much. Do we have any questions on our debt policy from the board? Director Armstrong?
I have a question and a request, maybe.
Okay.
But one question is, how do you determine, like, the priority of which... Which bucket gets filled first when they're coming from the same revenue sources?
Yeah, I think we had right now. So all of the reserves are at their minimum target.
Okay.
In the policy, we talk about if any one reserve falls under that target, that we would develop a plan to fund that. Let's go back to revenues, and a good one is on the capital for system betterment, as an example, that is funded from capital charges. And as you know, part of our rate has a capital component in which we, designate for that component. Mm-hmm. And so that goes into that reserve, and then we spend out of it. Really, when you look at the reserves that are changing, like the operating reserve, I mean, it's increasing, but it's really there as sort of a backstop. So I don't know if I'm answering the question, but it really depends on the revenue, where the revenue is coming. But since we're meeting the targets, in the policy, it actually does have some discussion about if once you meet a certain reserve, our practice has been those reserves have gone into capital, and thus why you have the $200 million in the system betterment reserve.
And then I think this is really great. And would, so this is the request part, would it be possible on a periodic basis to see a table that shows the targets, not just what's the calculation of the target, 2% of this, but what the actual number, you know, what the number is, and then where we're at, and just, you know, for each of the different categories, and just see that on some periodic basis?
Yes. So right now, the policy actually has us reporting this on a quarterly basis. And if you look in the second in the quarterly reports, you will see it. You don't see it at the detail that you see this. What you show, what if you go and look at the second quarter report, you'll see the 584. And it's only broken up into debt, capital, and operating. And so you know the numbers for the overall. So, you know, the third quarter report's coming up, and when we give that, I can probably do a little bit of the breakout there.
But don't we, aren't we planning on adjusting reserves once a year at the annual audit? So annually, it would make sense for us to bring back a listing of the, where we're at with the targets and where our reserves end up the year.
Yeah, and that could be, I mean, that could be done part of the financial report presentation. And as Laura said, certain reserves aren't going to be changed on a quarterly basis. Others do change on a quarterly basis. So,
but to your point, Director Armstrong, you will come back quarterly and have the broader reserve categories, and then, as Laura points out, at the end of the year, kind of do a reconciliation based on where we sit relative to the minimum reserve levels for each subcategory. I think John also pointed out, and I think it's a good question, if you're meeting all the reserves and the revenues coming in, how do you distribute that? And I think it's kind of a look forward and a look back. First, if in a specific category you're under, that would be obviously the first bucket that you would fill. Mm-hmm. And then also, I think to some extent, for example, if we have a big load of capital projects coming up and we did have revenue, you know, and we knew that wasn't anticipated, we would probably push that into that direction, knowing that there's going to be a big spend out of that capital fund. So it's kind of a look, you know, status, look back, look forward. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's, I think it's a great job, too. It's really nice.
Well, thank you. Just, you know, following up Mr. Jones's comments is, you know, part of having the reserve policy and doing the calculations that we go through the budget process is determining what our needs are and whether or not we issue debt. And I had made a comment at workshop one that we didn't anticipate debt issuance over the next 2 years because we have some in capital reserves that can be used over the next 2 years. So, you know, that's sort of where that money is going to fund the capital projects.
Director Record, any questions on this item?
No, good presentation. I appreciate Director Armstrong's comments.
Director Armstrong, would you like to make a motion on this item?
Sure, I'll make a motion. We adopt the resolution rescinding and adopt the new policy.
Thank you.
I'll second it.
We have a motion by Director Armstrong. I'm going to let Director Record second the motion on this. May I have a roll call, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The motion passes 4-0 with Director Corona absent. Mr. Mowad, would you mind if we took a break before we went on item D?
Absolutely. That's
all right. Let's take about a 10-minute break then.
Thank you.